your host, Benjamin Levesay, and for the next hour, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for our seventh episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am, I'm the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from our offices here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Before I welcome my guest today, I'd like to welcome my guest co-host to the show. 3 weeks ago, I started a contest asking for submissions for listeners like you to tell me why you should be my guest co-host on the episode. 9 people entered. These 9 were slimmed down to 3 finalists: Deb Buckingham, who is the author of Dishcloth Eva; Mary Sarnese, who is a fiber enthusiast and has also done some designing in her past; and Carrie McKee, who owns The Yarn Cellar, a local yarn store in York, Maine. All 3 of these finalists auditioned on their own closed test podcast, interviewing with my good friend Jeannie Randolph from PSD Yarns. On Friday night, my judges listened to each of the podcasts, and after a lot of deliberation, they found that I would be well served with any of them. They found all 3 finalists interesting and fun to listen to, and unfortunately, they had to choose one. And after listening to several segments over again, they chose Mary Sarnese as my guest co-hooligan. So Mary joins us from Barrie, Ontario. Good morning, Mary, and welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Benjamin. Thank you very much. And hello, everybody.
Fiber Hooligans, meet Mary. Mary, meet Fiber Hooligans.
So am I a hooligan now?
I think there's a little hooligan in all of us. So I love it. As much as you Canadians can be a hooligan, eh?
That's right, eh?
That's right. You're very polite. You're very polite, a hooligan.
I think so.
I think so, too. So I'd like to ask you, Mary, to please tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, because I know a lot about you now, but they don't, so...
Okay, I'll tell you a little bit about myself. I'm originally from Toronto. Well, we say Toronto, Ontario, and I now live just north of the city, about an hour's away. I love to knit, love to knit, but it wasn't always like that. My mother tried numerous times to teach me how to knit, but I wasn't interested then until, I guess, around the teens era. Yeah, when I was about 18, 19, I rediscovered knitting. I then ventured out into searching for a college that would teach me how to knit or teach me how to design. So I did take knit design for 2-3 years, and I learned a lot there. But it wasn't hand knitting. It was machine knitting and a lot of other things that went with it. But after that, I managed to find a job with a manufacturer, a knit manufacturer, and I was a designer there. I learned a lot and moved on to other things, entered fashion shows, worked for myself, so I did quite a bit. And then I got married, had a wonderful son, and I was a stay-at-home mom for quite a few years, and I enjoyed every minute. And now it's Mama's turn to spread her wings. So I'm, hoping to venture out into my designing area again, once again, and enjoying every minute of it already.
Well, that's wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed the time we've gotten to talk and exchange emails. You were one of 9 entries, as I said before, into the contest, but you were the only one that actually sent me an MP3 trial interview. I think it was your niece who interviewed you, and you sent me like an interview file.
I did. And I really enjoyed doing that. I thought, what a better way to introduce myself than that?
It was very interesting, and I kind of hoped that somebody would, not to say that I didn't get wonderful essays. I did. Carrie and Deb sent me beautiful essays, but it was very, it's ingenious of you. So I want to congratulate you. I want to congratulate you on winning the contest. One of the things that you won, of course, was a works package to Stitches. Have you decided which one you're going to attend yet?
I'm really excited, Benjamin. I think I will go to the... California one. I do have a niece that lives in California, so I'm just going to combine the two. So either, probably next year. Yeah.
That's wonderful. I think that As a consolation prize for both Carrie and Deb, I gave them each an almost the works package, and I think one of them is planning on going to Midwest and one is going to East. So I'll get to see you all three in three separate shows. That'll be wonderful.
Oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations, girls.
So, are you excited to get going today?
I am very excited.
So, shall we? I mean, you and I could sit here and talk, I suppose, and just ignore
Sure.
her at all. But maybe we should get on with it and introduce her
Yeah,
into the
let's
show.
get
What do you
on with
think?
it.
All right.
Absolutely.
All right. Our guest today is a very funny and talented lady. She is a fiber artist, both a knit and crochet wear designer, author of her self-published books, Crazy Lace and Creative Crochet Lace. She has been published in numerous magazines, including Knitters Magazine. She's appeared on TV shows, including Knitty Gritty and Knit and Crochet Now. She teaches a wide range of inspiring knit and crochet classes for Stitches Expos and Craftsy.com. I'm speaking, of course, of my good friend Myra Wood. Myra joins us from Los Angeles, California this morning. Good morning, Myra, and welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Well,
Hi,
it's always a good
Myra.
day with.
Hi, you guys. Hi, Mary. I'm so excited for you.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
So, does this make me an official hooligan?
Oh, you've always been a hooligan.
I know I've
I can
always been a hooligan, but this is official now.
Oh, yeah.
always been a. I mean, I think you were actually there when I sort of got named hooligan
Oh,
first.
I was there.
Yeah.
Oh, you
Yeah.
were?
But what happens at Stitches stays at Stitches, so I'm not saying
Yeah.
anything.
Well, I mean, I have promised to tell the story at some point, but not today. I want to keep the attention on the two of you. But yeah, Myra was actually there when I got coined this.
Oh,
Um,
yeah.
yeah.
Quite a story. Quite a story.
It is quite a story. It involved bunny slippers and the chance of being arrested. So that's
Definitely
all we'll
involves
say.
bunny slippers.
And that's all we're going to say about
That's
that.
it.
So
That's it. I don't
that's
think we
it.
need to talk anymore about
No, no,
it.
no. No, it's still too fresh. Still too fresh. So I
Too
want
soon.
too soon, too soon. Something makes me laugh about this. No. So I wanted to ask before we get going, I wanted to ask about, the two loves of your life, of course, your husband and your dog, and not necessarily in that order. I won't judge
Oh.
But so how is Paige and how's your pooch?
Well, Paige is amazing. He's just, I'm blessed. I wake up every morning and think about that man and think, I found the love of my life, and it's just an amazing thing. And the other love of my life, I don't know if you'd really call him a dog. They call them toy dogs for a reason because they're not real dogs. I mean, you have a real dog. You have an actual dog. I have like sort of a rat weasel of a dog. But I love him. I think he's a great guy, and he's going to be 14 on the 10th of May.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. He's the Smunch.
What's his name?
His name is the Smunch, like the edge. He's the Smunch.
The Smudge.
Yes,
Okay.
he's the Smunch.
I think you have a whimsy for those kinds of naming things, Myra.
I kind of do. And that's not his only name, as like most dog lovers, they know that they have at least 100 different names for the dog. So it's Munch, Smunch, Pootie, you name it. He's got names. Every day it's a new name.
I think that's
All right.
hilarious.
Well, Myra is a funny gal. She's a funny gal. We're gonna get to that here pretty soon. So I'm gonna start this off if you don't mind this morning, Mary, and then I'll let you pick up after me. Is that okay?
Sure.
All
Absolutely.
right. So for those who don't know about you, and I think it's incredible if somebody doesn't know about you and they're missing out, I'd like to ask you to please tell us kind of your story. How did you get into this? You have a background in graphics
Yes.
and you have not been a quote unquote full time fiber arts person all of your life.
Right.
So can you tell me, let's just hear your story.
Okay. So, going back to when I was a small child, well, my mother was wonderful. My mother was incredible because instead of toys, we made stuff. So I grew up learning how to sew and knit and crochet, and everything surrounded Barbie. It was all about Barbie. So whatever clothes we could make for Barbie, that's what we did. And we spent hours upon hours just making her clothes. So what was great about that is I really did learn how to knit and sew and do all that. And then by the time I was a teenager, I was actually taking formal sewing classes and really learned how to make clothing, that kind of thing. then as a teenager, it wasn't cool. It just wasn't cool to do any of that stuff. So I stopped for a long time, but I would secretly crochet. You know, I always sort of had that in my back pocket, and I would make granny square afghans and things and never talked about it because, you know, people thought you were kind of weird. But I kept going, and then I got involved in graphics, and I was very lucky. I had a wonderful career as a graphic designer for many, many years. And really, specifically, I was working on retouching. Retouching is when you make people look their best. So I did that for many years for the entertainment industry. And I always had knit and crochet as my sort of backup plan, and it also was the thing that I did to kind of keep me sane. You know, it's a crazy world out here in Hollywood. So, and what would happen is the job was really 24 hours. We would get calls any time of day or night, you know, with these emergencies to fix something or do something, but there's lots of hours in between. So I ended up spending most of my time knitting and crocheting and doing that kind of stuff while I was waiting for phone calls. And then I got into local teaching. Like, I found that, you know, the yarn stores I was going to would say, well, can you teach how to do that? And I'd say, okay, yeah, that sounds good. And so I taught for a little while on the local level, and then I was a member of CGOA and TKGA, and I started teaching for them on the national level, and things were really great. I had a really nice balance. And then the industry changed. The industry, the entertainment industry changed quite a bit, and more people were learning how to do Photoshop, and it was actually a blessing because as it slowed down, I started working more and more in the fiber arts field, and I started teaching full-time, and then I actually did a couple books, and I just started getting more and more involved, and then at one point, I sort of looked over my shoulder and went, wow, I'm not a retoucher anymore. I'm a knitting teacher. So what's great is when people ask me what I do now for a living, I say I'm a knitting teacher, and it's really exciting.
Well, I would say that, you know, and it's kind of funny because we all have these names that we give things. You know, you're a teacher, you're a designer, and things like that.
Yeah.
And yes, you are a teacher and you're a designer. But to call you a knitting teacher or a crochet teacher is actually kind of a misnomer. That's really not what you do. That's just a medium by which you do what you do.
I think that's a great point. You know, something that's one of my missions in life, too, is to spread the gospel of being bistitual, because I really do believe in, you know, this whole idea of identifying yourself as, I'm really glad you said that, as if, you know, I hear a lot of people say things like, I'm a knitter or I'm a crocheter. You know, to me, it's a toy box. It's all kinds of stuff we get to play with. So the more stuff you know, and the more, you know, rather than identifying myself as, oh, I'm a whatever, I love the thought that these are all wonderful tools we get to play with. I mean, we love yarn. That's the one thing we all have in common is we love yarn. And the more tools you have in your toolbox, the more you get to play with them. So I'm really a big proponent of try everything.
Myra, may I quote you on something that you wrote?
Oh, sure.
I love this. I'll help you rediscover your sense of play and wonder using sticks and string.
Oh,
I love that.
I mean, that's kind of, like I said, I sort of have this mission in life, and that is to inspire mm-hmm. people to play and just rediscover themselves. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into it quite a bit, but I just believe that everybody has the ability to be creative and play and just enjoy themselves. And I just figure that I'm the reminder. It's like I get to play with you guys. I get to play, and sticks and string is a wonderful way to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to turn it over to you, Mary. You must have some more questions.
Sure. I would love to know what motivates you and inspires you.
Wow, that's a big one. You know, I'm going to just say everything, but I'll be more specific.
Sure.
You know, everything inspires me, but a lot of what inspires me is color, and you know, on the fiber level, it's all the different fibers and things. I really get inspired by just touching the yarns and, you know, going into a shop or going to the stitches markets and really just being immersed in that stuff and seeing all the colors and everything. And that's, I mean, that's a small part of it. One of the main parts for me is the community of crocheters and knitters and fiber artists of all kinds. I get so inspired being around people who love this stuff as much as I do. And, you know, there's so many people. We are so lucky because people are so passionate about this. And I find nothing more inspiring than just sitting and talking to somebody about, like, what their project is they're working on. And I also, I am really, really blessed and lucky to have a best friend. Her name's Elaine Warren, and Elle is just an amazing, amazing fiber artist. But the thing that we have in common is that, I mean, besides the fact that we're really close friends, we inspire each other daily. Like, we will talk about whatever it is we're working on and come up with ideas together. And, you know, I find having a design partner, somebody that you work with and that you talk to, really, really inspiring. I mean, I could go on and on. There's so many things that
right.
motivate me and inspire me. And it's, you know, I find it's endless.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I have to agree with you about the knitters and crocheters, how we all inspire each other. I find them to be such wonderful, warm people.
It's an amazing community.
Absolutely. I could walk into a bookstore, and I could be standing there, and a woman would just approach me. We're both looking at the same magazines or books, and we just start talking, and we'll end up talking for an hour.
Yeah. And, you know, I always think of it like, I always say that, you know, knitting or crochet is the best chick magnet, because I can be sitting in the airport, and if I'm knitting or crocheting, which I usually am, somebody's coming over to ask me what I'm doing.
Oh, that's funny. That's good.
You know, there's going to be somebody who walks over and goes, oh, you know, I used to knit or crochet. It's like, well, get back to it. Do it. It's really fun. And then anytime, don't you find that if you see somebody sitting there knitting or crocheting, especially in the airport, you have to sort of saddle up to them and go, so what are you doing?
Oh, I do.
What are you making?
Did you knit that?
Exactly. Did you knit that? That's beautiful. And then you know you're really a yarn geek when you can name the yarn of the things they made. That's really nice. That's Barocco tweed, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm guilty. I've done that to people.
Now, Myra, do you work from home? Do you have a home studio or do you go to a studio? What exactly do you have?
We've always worked from home. Paige and I mm-hmm. have been really lucky. We have this little company called Woodworks, and we worked from home doing graphics for many years, and so I sort of set up my studio within that. And what's great is I can sort of, you know, wear two hats. I joke and say I'm retoucher by day, knitter by night. And so, like, I can put my different hats on and work in the same area. And Paige is really patient. He's wonderful about if I'm working on a project, I can spread out. I can put all my yarns out in the studio and, you know, have everything surrounding me. But there is always that one point where he comes to me and goes, so you almost done with this sweater? And I always know, okay, I'm pushing my limit now.
So when you're working from home, I have a really serious question.
Yeah.
Do you work in your PJs?
Oh.
Or do you follow a strict routine?
Okay, right now I have a T-shirt on with the Nerds Candy logo.
Uh-huh.
I have my moccasins on with the fur, which I love those. Don't you love those
nice.
Moccasins? Yeah, I
mm-hmm.
love those. And a jean skirt. I did put a jean skirt on. So, yeah, usually it's very eclectic wear, I find.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yes. A lot of us like to work at home in our pajamas. Well, I know I do sometimes. You know,
yeah, exactly.
A casual day.
Well, don't you always think, too, about the UPS guy when he comes to the door and sees everybody in their pajamas in the middle of the day?
Absolutely.
You know, I always think about, wow, he must look at me like, do you ever get dressed? Ever?
Oh, my gosh. So if the UPS guy were to look through your studio window.
Yes.
Would he see a yarn-bombed room or a freakishly neat room? What would he see? We want to know. I want to know.
Well, you know, I think that's really interesting because I think I might be a little bit unique in this, in that I have to have everything really straightened up in the morning. Like, I have my morning ritual of, you know, cleaning the dishes and cleaning the kitchen and making sure everything's straight, and then by the end of the day, yarn bomb.
Okay. That makes me
feel good.
Total
yarn bomb.
Right. Now, are you like many of my writer and artist friends? Like, we're usually up like early in the morning to start work for the day, and they don't answer the phone till 12 noon. Are you like that also?
You know, if I'm into a project, I might not answer the phone for a couple days.
Oh,
I
wow.
seriously get so absorbed in whatever it is I'm doing. I can wake up, come upstairs, get in the studio, forget that I didn't brush my teeth, and then remind myself, oh, yeah, you got to go back downstairs and get dressed.
Right.
But, yeah, you know, I think that that's, it's like you just get obsessed and you get focused on something and you just want to keep working on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm definitely a morning person. You know,
I
tend
to
get up.
You.
Yeah.
I was just about to ask you, are you a morning person or a night person? Okay.
No, I'm in bed by 11.
Oh, are you? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's over. My husband always laughs because somehow or another I have this amazing ability to fall asleep at the same time every night, and it's 11:11, and we call it corduroy time.
Oh, you know what? When I look at the clock, I always see 11:11. Isn't that strange?
That's corduroy time.
We all talk about that.
Isn't that weird? But it's true.
Yeah.
It's like you just fall asleep at the same time, and then he goes, oh, got to go to bed. It's corduroy time.
Right. That's a good one. I do have to apologize, Benjamin. I'm just talking away here. I'm sorry.
No
oh,
problem.
I'm having the best time. Are you kidding?
Nope. No problem. Do you mind if I take over for a few questions?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So I know we're going to talk about your Craftsy classes in a little bit. I'm going to actually let Mary talk about that. But I'd like to talk about your Stitches classes, if I could.
Okay.
And your history with us, and in particular, I wanted to make sure that people kind of understood the history of you and our company as well. I think, if I recall this right, that you and I met probably 6 years ago, and you started teaching for Stitches about 5 years ago. Did I have that right?
That's exactly right, yeah, because you know what? We met at a TNNA when I had done my first book, and I remember hunting you down because I really wanted to show it to you. And we met then, and we had a great conversation. It was wonderful. But we actually met before that because I used to take classes up at Stitches. I took Debbie News classes. I took a bunch of classes.
That's right. And that was the first West that I went to when I came back into the company. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, because I know that we met them, but I was kind of off the radar at that point. I didn't, you know, I wasn't really paying attention or focused to what I was doing. But, and then I guess it was the next year I really wanted to teach at Stitches. I have to say, I've taught for many, many organizations. I love them all, but there's nothing like teaching for Stitches. It's, you guys are the best. I love the organization. You know, Team Stitches does rule. It's just an amazing event. It's so well organized, and just the whole vibe of it. I mean, the people that come, it's just a wonderful thing. So I feel so lucky to teach for Stitches. It's a wonderful thing. And I'm not just saying that.
No, I know you're not. It's we have a great crew. I mean, you know, between
it's
Molly
a great crew.
Molly and Mavis, Christy, Rick, everybody, Karen.
Oh,
everybody.
My God, I love those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, they're all very good. They make me look good, which is a hard thing to do. So
it's a hard thing to do, Benjamin.
I know.
We work hard.
I know, it's such a slacker. And speaking of making us look good, you have now been, I believe, in 4 opening days throughout the years.
I love opening day. I just love opening day. That has been so much fun. I was a little nervous at first because, you know, I've never really done any kind of public speaking. And the idea of the challenges, you know, I love the idea, but the thing that made me nervous at first was that I was going to be in front of, you know, a group of people and I had to do a presentation. But what I found out when I was doing them was, first of all, apparently I'm a total ham and I love talking to people. And it's an amazing thing when you're standing on a stage and you're looking out and there's an entire auditorium of people who are all knitting and crocheting at the same time. You really feel like you're at home. So that's an amazing thing. And then, you know, as you can tell, everybody will be able to tell, I love talking about this stuff. I love being able to be passionate and just enjoy talking about whatever it is, the project that I was working on. And the thing that's amazing about the opening days that I've done is they were all challenges. They were all some type of a challenge where, you know, Elaine and Rick basically presented, you know, several people with several designers with an idea, a theme or whatever, and very vague. And what was great was not very specific at all. And then we would interpret it however we liked. And, you know, the interaction of working with Rick and Elaine over these challenges has just shaped me as a designer and really changed and made me evolve. So, you know, I think the challenges, the opening days are just amazing. I'm looking forward to doing more if you'll let me.
Well, I'm sure it's going to happen. Let's talk about your last opening day presentation, which was south of last year?
South of last year, I think, yeah.
South of last year. That was your last time that you went. It was a design challenge.
Right.
And there were two really notable parts of that for me. The first is you almost fell off the stage.
Yes, I did.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, no, I did actually fall off the stage. Not almost. Like, took a tumble, took a header right off the back of the stage.
Right. But you recovered.
Thanks for mentioning that.
No problem.
I'll never live that one down.
The only thing
I was really upset about falling off the stage is we have something called a la carte at all the Stitches events, which is the teachers rotate around to each one of the tables to talk about, you know, at the opening day luncheon to talk about what they do and all that. And the teachers eat first. They actually go out and have lunch first. And all of my teacher friends weren't in the room to see me fall off the stage. It really upset me. I wanted them to be able to.
We have it on video. We have it on
okay,
video.
Okay, good.
I'll make sure that they get to see that.
Good, great. I'm glad.
Okay. No problem.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yes. One of the things that you did for that is, and for people that don't know about the design challenges, most times the design challenges, the pieces from the design challenges end up in Knitters Magazine.
Yeah.
In this particular design challenge, you made one of my favorite garments from any Knitters Magazine.
Thank you.
You did it two different ways. One was a knit and crochet way, and one was a completely knit way. I think it was called the butterfly shawl, and
yep.
If memory serves, it was in Skissel's Osterman.
It
was gorgeous, very dynamic, and kind of different than anything I've ever seen you do before.
Yeah, and you know, I think that's where I really have to tip my hat to Elaine and Rick, because that is something that before the challenges I may not have even considered doing. But the wonderful thing about it was through the challenges, they, you know, that what it is that you have to design something that ultimately another person can make. And that's not something that I normally do. I do stuff that, you know, it's sort of unique or it's one of a kind or, you know, and I show people how to do that kind of stuff. But this was one of the things where not only did I have to do something that other people could make, but I wanted to keep it really simple because, you know, in previous competitions or not competitions, challenges, I had made them a little more complicated. And so one of the, you know, some of the feedback that I had, which was wonderful, was think of how to do this as elegantly and as simply as you can and still make it really interesting. So I decided to work on a shape that would be a modular type of thing, because I love doing all the modular stuff, and that could be done fairly simply. I mean, the whole thing is the concept of that piece is more complicated. Figuring out how to do it was way more complicated than the actual knitting itself or the crochet. So once I got it all together, it was this amazing puzzle that I just really enjoyed doing. And, yeah, it really was a departure from what I normally do, but from doing that, I feel like my whole sensibility about how I design and what I, you know, the types of things that I design has changed too. So it's really a cool evolution. It's really fun to, you know, do these things. And then instead of being stuck in one thing, you know, sometimes as designers, you really find yourself reinventing your own wheel all the time. And what's cool about this is that, you know, from the challenge, I had to think outside my box. I had to think outside and think, you know, how can I do what I do, keep it really interesting and funky, but also change it up. So it was a great, you know, that was a great experience. That one, I feel like that top really sort of was a paradigm shift for me.
I think it was too. I'm going to turn this over to Mary in just a minute, but before, since we're on the Stitches Expos thing, let's talk about your teaching style, the way that
okay.
you're dealing with this thing. I said before that you teach classes both knit and crochet, but I really don't see you as a knit or crochet wear design teacher. I see you as
yeah.
an inspiration teacher. Can you talk about your classes and kind of the way you come at them?
Absolutely. You know, I think that the most important thing that I can convey to anyone, and the main reason that I do this, is that I'm really interested in inspiring people creatively. You know, the whole idea is that we have all these wonderful skills. What we share is this wonderful love of our crafts and what we do. But a lot of times people get stuck in a place of they don't know what else they can do with it, or they, you know, they follow a pattern and they come out with something. But, you know, what I'm really trying to do is reawaken everyone's creative spirit. And I really believe everyone's creative. And I know that that sounds really scary, you know, the idea, because I always hear people go, no, I'm not creative. Oh, I couldn't be as creative as you, that kind of thing. And I think that's crazy. I mean, I really believe that creativity is a process, and it really comes down to making decisions along the way about certain things that you're doing. So my classes are really geared around teaching people process, how to think about doing something with what they know how to do. And I do teach lots of technique too, but what I try to do is take the stuff that people know and love doing and show them different ways to do it, and show them how to think about it differently, so that what they're doing is they're taking what they love to do already and now figuring out what else they can do with it. And what I find is, I mean, for me, the whole creative process goes through your entire life. I mean, everything to me is sort of a creative process. And, you know, people are not sure what creative means. I mean, a lot of people think creativity means something you're gifted with or something that, you know, you're touched with. And I don't believe that. I mean, I really believe that we all, as human beings, are creative people. And just making dinner, you make decisions about what you're going to make. And that's a lot of what the creativity is. So my classes really are geared around those kind of things, those exercises to get people to work what they know how to do and learn some new techniques. I mean, I always teach new techniques, and I teach, you know, specifics on whatever it is we're going to make, or, you know, whatever it is the technique is. But I also show them lots of options, lots of different ways that they can apply it to other things too. Because I'm sort of, you know, I'm less of a specific project person and more of I want people to go home feeling empowered and feeling like now they have more tools when they're in their toolbox.
Well, that's exactly the right answer. So one of the things that you and I have had many conversations about, and this is going to be kind of a hard talk, and you and I have
yeah.
talked about it, but I think that one of the things this show can do is we can successfully express ourselves in a considered way, but also call a spade a spade.
Yeah.
It was over a year ago that you and I started talking at length about the inclusion of crochet in Stitches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you know I've done a lot of work on that and have tried very hard to engage the crochet community. You know that we're big crocheters as well.
Right.
You teach both knit and crochet classes. I've had
right.
this conversation with Drew, and I've had the conversation with Myra. There's a difference in the mentality of those traditional fiber artists.
Yeah.
Would you care to talk about that?
Oh, that is so interesting. Yes. You know, it's a funny thing. This goes back to what we were just talking about in terms of identifying yourself. And I find that there are different mentalities in the fiber world, like there are in everything. But one of the things that's very interesting to me is that, you know, there are people that identify themselves just as knitters or just as crocheters, and then there are subsets of those people that just knit or just crochet. And, you know, I think that what happens is when a person defines themselves and just does one thing or the other, they tend to really isolate themselves from the larger world. Well, that said, the most interesting thing that I've found, and I don't know why this is, knitters, for the most part, even people who just knit, are open to learning lots of stuff. Like, there's lots of techniques and lots of learning to do. And crocheters, some people, I'm not going to say all, because we have a wonderful, loyal following of wonderful crocheters who are now coming to all the crochet classes. But there's kind of this weird subset of crochet mentality where they are independent in terms of, no, I don't need to take a class, or I don't need to, you know, nobody needs to show me what to do. And I like to refer to them as the cranky crocheters. And, you know, it's kind of like they just are not going to be happy no matter what. And I just feel like, you know, I can't say how much and how happy and how thankful I am that you have included crochet the way that you have in all of the XRX stuff. I mean, the people that do both or, you know, just crochet, there's a lot of people who are really thankful for it, because there wasn't a real place where you could play and do different things, you know, and now there is. Now there's a place where it's inclusive. It's completely inclusive of all kinds of stuff. But even still, I find that my knitting classes sell out almost immediately. They're really popular. Everything's great. And the crochet classes, people do not take as much as the knitting classes. Now, the funny thing is, though, I'm getting a lot more knitters who are learning to crochet. And that's been really exciting because, you know, I kind of feel like that we have adventurous people who are willing to cross the lines and do, you know, all the different stuff. And I'm getting a lot of people who, they're fairly new crocheters, but they're willing to experiment and take classes. And they were knitters before. They were people who primarily knit and didn't do anything else. But I'm not finding it as much with the crocheters. The crocheters who, you know, we have some amazing, I mean, outstanding, loyal crochet fans who really do show up. But for the most part, I really find that the crocheters, especially the ones that were the most vocal about showing up and wanting a certain type of class, they don't. And, this is like the holy grail to me. It's kind of like, well, if we offer exactly what you want, if you ask for it and we offer it and you don't show up, I'm not sure what else we can do.
I felt that way as well. Having said that, I have seen some examples of what I would call diehard crocheters show up and support the shows.
Absolutely.
And I would keep doing it just for them. I share your disappointment. I mean, I think you can recall the instances where I was getting wrapped on the knuckles quite severely by some crocheters out there. I think we all worked very hard to try to give them what they asked for, and it wasn't always done. But the good side is that some of them really are supporting us, and it's still new. And the greatest thing is that, wow, those knitters, they are turning themselves into crocheters.
Yeah,
I love that.
Absolutely. I do too. You know, it's really exciting to me because a lot of the people that come to Stitches now are taking both types of classes and they're expanding. You know, it's all about empowerment and expansion. It's like they get to go home and play with even more stuff. And, you know, I mean, to me, it really is all sticks and string. And I love that thing that in some languages, the word for crochet and knitting is the same word. And, you know, I sort of feel like that, too. It's like it doesn't really matter what's in my hand. Whatever tool it is, I'm going to play with it and see what I can do with it. And there are times when I have a knitting needle in my left hand and a crochet hook in my right hand, if I'm doing noops, for instance. So, you know, it's all sticks and string.
Absolutely. Well, Mary, I've been talking for far too long. I'll let you take over for a little bit.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. Myra, I absolutely agree with you. You're very inspiring. I am a knitter who is venturing into crochet also.
Oh, good.
And I think it's fantastic.
Oh, that's wonderful. And, you know, it's the kind of thing, too, where there are so many, you know, when you think about knitting and crochet in general, there's types of knitting I don't love doing. There's other types that I adore doing. There's types of crochet I don't love doing, and there's types of crochet that I adore doing. And, you know, it's kind of a misnomer to say knitting or crochet, because there's so many subcategories. One of the things that I'm absolutely in love with these days is Irish crochet, and what they're doing in Russia and the Ukraine with Irish crochet is mind-boggling.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Amazing stuff, just beautiful. And, you know, a lot of people take a look at it and they go, what is that? And it's like, it's crochet. It's actually crochet. But they, you know, there's also that stigma that crochet has suffered for many, many years of being big box store, you know, acrylic. Mm-hmm. But crocheters are using everything that knitters use, too. And that's the wonderful thing, is that the knitters who are now crocheting get to get to do even more stuff with their stash.
Right, and they're combining crochet with knitting and beautiful garments, not
just trims. Yeah, exactly.
I used to use it just to trim.
Yeah.
But combining both, so that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. Well, I'm so glad you're doing that.
Yeah. Now, last year I was on a quest, Myra.
Okay.
I had to find something online, a place where I could just, you know, learn from without leaving the home, because I had a small child or whatever I had. But I came across Craftsy.
Okay. That's excellent.
The classes there were unbelievable, and I believe the first one I purchased was your class.
Oh, okay.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I love this woman. I love what she's teaching.
Oh, thank you.
Now, what exactly prompted you to teach at Craftsy?
You know, it's a new way to reach out to people. And I loved the whole platform. I thought that it's great that, I mean, there are many, many people who, for many reasons, really can't take the time or afford or whatever it is to come to the larger events. So Craftsy is this incredible way to be able to be in contact with people and actually teach. I mean, the content on the Craftsy classes, I have to say, I'm a big Craftsy addict, and every time they have a sale, I have to buy 4 new classes. So I don't know how I'm ever going to watch all the classes that I bought. But the classes, the quality of the classes is really wonderful, and the education, you know, they've really made an effort to make sure that the value that you get for, I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible. You pay very little to get an entire education on whatever it is you're interested in. And so I was really excited to do it, and now I'm into it. I think I'm into the second year, and we have almost 7,000 students in my class.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's incredible. And what's great is the interaction, because I'm there. I can, you know, I answer emails when they come in, the questions come in. But also there's a community now building up where people are talking to each other in the class. So it's great. I did it really because I really think that they're doing it the right way. I love the quality of the classes, and because I wanted to be able to reach out to even more people.
Well, I must say I love your voice.
Oh, thank you.
You have
That's very funny to me, because I have to tell you, I feel like I'm such a Jersey girl, and when I talk, I can hear my Jersey. It's like you can take the girl out of New Jersey, but you can't take Jersey out of the girl. Well, so that's very nice to hear.
I love it. I love the way you sound.
Thanks.
I love the way you teach. You're so enthusiastic.
You're so knowledgeable.
So nice. You're everything a teacher should be.
Oh, I really appreciate that. You know, this whole teaching experience for me it's something I never saw coming. You know, I never would have thought that I would have done it, but it's been the most rewarding thing I've ever done in my life. And it's something that, you know, I can't believe I fell into this and I'm able to reach out to other people who love it. And, you know, I think the most amazing thing to me is I love going to the events, but one of the things is I come home even more inspired and energized from the interaction from the students and finding out what they're doing and seeing. I mean, people will come in after having taken a class and go way beyond anything I ever did with the techniques. And it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe what they do. So it's really fun. It's just amazing.
I love also love the fact that you teach without a pattern.
Yes.
Oh, you know what, Myra? When I was growing up, I didn't know what a swatch was.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yep.
I never followed a pattern. I thought it was weird.
Wow.
You know?
No. You know,
and then I discovered you.
I think that's even a more traditional way to do it. There were a lot of people who were taught to just measure themselves and start working and, you know, get to a certain point and see what you need to do. And there, to me, there are formulas for basic shapes and for different approaches. And once you know what it is, it's kind of like there's rules that you know, and then you get to break them. And I find that is where the fun of it is for me. It's like if I know what something's going to look like before I start it, why should I bother doing it? So I'm just that kind of person. So, you know, and I know that there are many people who they get great joy out of following a pattern line for line and then finding out at the very end that they did it perfectly. But I just, you know, my kind of joy comes from finding out what it is that I'm making along the way. And so, you know, yeah, I think that I don't necessarily think that you have to. I follow a lot of patterns in terms of stitch patterns. I'm really big on stitch patterns. I love stitch patterns. But when it comes to the overall pattern, I generally look at the overall thing, find out how it's constructed, and then go off on my own anyway.
Well, thank you, because I thought I was the only one. But,
good. I'm glad. There's lots of us out there.
Yeah. Now, if I may, Myra, I would like to read an excerpt from one of the reviews from your Crafty class. Is that
okay
with you?
Sure.
Okay. I thought this was so wonderful. She says, after 40 years of knitting, I could now design lace and knit a top down sweater without a pattern. Yay! I never learned such wonderful skills for designing a sweater in a huge range of gauges. The plethora of creative paths that can be taken after this course are limitless.
Aww.
Myra is a wonderful teacher. She is clear and thorough, cute as a button. It is no easy feat to learn to design a sweater without a pattern, but Myra has broken it down into such step-by-step manageable pieces that making a sweater top-down cardigan of your own design was a breeze. Myra is a fantastic teacher, and I'm so grateful to her for teaching this class. Love it, love it, love it.
Oh, Mary, that's so nice.
Oh, I had tears when I read that because I
felt amazing.
You know, and I thought, oh my gosh, I mean, you have so many wonderful, wonderful comments out there. I wish I had more time to read them, but I can't.
Well, you know, and I think that's really it. That's why I'm doing this, is because I really want people to get that excited. And that's really, thanks for reading that. That was really sweet.
Oh, it was my pleasure. And I do sense that in you. You are fantastic.
Thank you.
Now, Myra, what advice can you offer to the men and women out there that are just coming out of school and they all want a career in knitting or knit design, or they want to teach?
Right.
Like, where do they begin? I mean, it's so hard. I mean, nobody really tells you what to do or where to go or just how to start.
Right.
What advice can you give?
You know, I think that the best way to start is to start small and start with everything. Like, if you, first of all, Ravelry is unbelievable. And a lot of people, you know, I just think that Ravelry is one of the most amazing things that's ever happened, you know.
It's
because
huge, yeah.
It's huge, and it also allows people to start, you know, to start doing things. And so, you know, maybe the first thing a person does is write a pattern and put it on Ravelry and see what kind of reactions they get, and go to the local yarn stores and teach crochet or knitting classes. And, you know, it all builds on itself. That's the main thing that I found, is that it takes a while. It does take time. But if you know, it's like you're not going to come out of school and immediately get the dream job. But what happens is, if you pursue it and you keep at it and you do lots of different things, maybe you teach, maybe you submit to some magazines, maybe you do some self-publishing, just all the different things, then eventually you find, oh my gosh, I've got a career doing this.
Right. Well, you have to start somewhere. Don't expect to start at the top.
Exactly.
I prefer to start small.
Yeah.
That's how you learn.
That's how you learn. And, you know, the whole idea is that you need that kind of experience first, and you can get we have such an amazing community that it's like you'll get lots of feedback.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'll take it away, Benjamin. Thank you, Myra.
Okay.
So, Myra, one of the things that I think is, you referred to your self-published books. We've talked about them before.
Right.
Beautiful books and very popular books. I think you had trouble keeping the one in print, didn't you?
The one's out of print, and yes, that's a whole subject about self-publishing. I know it's a really, really popular book, and many people want me to reprint it, but, you know, I'm not a self-publisher, and I'm not a publisher, and my hat's off to all the publishers, because it's a lot of work.
Well, I mean, I guess the question I think that everybody wants to know is, you know, there were obviously popular books. I mean, are we going to see another book from you at some point?
Well, ooh, I hope so.
Funny you should mention that, because there is a book in the works, and I've been working really hard on it, and I'm working with XRX on the book, which has been just an amazing process, and we're hoping to get it out hopefully somewhere near the beginning of next year, and yes, I am doing another book.
Ooh.
So that was the big reveal. Folks, not many people knew about this, and we just got clearance from our editorial folks that we can talk about this a little bit. So, yes, Myra will be an XRX Books author, and we're not going to get too much into this, but why don't you tell us a little bit about what the book is all about?
Okay, so this is something that is near and dear to my heart, and something that, you know, I've wanted to write about for years and years. I'm doing a book on 101 savory tofu recipes,
which I think will go great with Drew and his Cajun Catfish Corner.
Hey, it is still April, isn't it?
It is still April, absolutely. Nope, I got you there, and I decided to go right with you, absolutely.
Okay,
no,
good.
I think that tofu is really what's missing from the knitting world. I really
hey, listen, we, there are a lot of vegetarian fiber people, so, you know, I got to represent.
Right. You go, girl.
You go, girl. Woohoo! Oh,
well, actually, that's not the book I'm writing, but I would someday. The book I'm writing is really a dream come true, and it is, you know, it sort of evolved from the challenges that I did, and Elaine and Rick approached me about doing something that represents my process and represents the way that I think and my philosophy and the way that I like to teach, and so the book will reflect a lot of that. So it's very, very exciting. It's just, you know, I wake up in the morning, and from the minute I wake up until I go to sleep, which, you know, these days is 11:12, I'm knitting, and it's just a joy.
Well, you've almost dropped off the grid completely there. I've seen you, you know, days go before emails are answered sometimes, and Facebook, you've almost disappeared from Facebook.
I know. I used to live online. I seriously did. I lived online. You could get me anytime, and then it was like, boom, she's gone.
You disappeared into the couch.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the other thing, is that I'm always on the sofa no matter what.
With your big fuzzy slippers and your needles, uh-huh?
Exactly. Mary, do you know this thing is that I refer to myself as a sofa-based crafter?
No. Oh, wait a minute. Of course I do, because you said that in your video there.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
You do everything on the couch.
If you can do it on the sofa, I'm there. It's like nothing makes me happier than something I can do on the sofa.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I had to give up the sewing machine for a while because it's really hard on the sofa.
But if you could, you would, right?
I would. I absolutely would.
You gave us a brief overview of the book. I think you can give us a little more specifics in it, just, you know, without
hitting
too much. So let's talk a little bit about kind of what's going to be in the book. So just general, blurbish, you know?
Yeah. You know, the book has a number of different approaches, and really it has exercises, very specific exercises for different ways to create garments without a specific pattern, row-by-row pattern. And some of those, you know, even though I will include patterns, what I encourage people to do is figure out some alternatives to whatever it is I'm doing, too. And I give lots of hints. You know, you could do it this way, or you could do it that way, or you could mix and match, and you can play with the stuff. So, you know, I do a lot of stuff with templates, but not everything is template-based. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that you don't need a template for at all. And my general, you know, the approach in the book is, how many different ways can you do stuff without following someone else's row-by-row pattern? And what I'm hoping is that through this book, people will feel empowered to be able to create stuff on their own, and that they will come up with their own. And, you know, it's not, again, creativity is a scary word, and I know design is a scary word for some people, too. But designing a sweater, it really comes down to just making the choices of certain things, and that's that, you know, this book will be all the different processes of what can you do within shapes, what can you do once you've defined what it is you're going to make. And I'm going to do lots of different techniques. There's all kinds of techniques that, and a lot of it is stuff that I teach in classes, but I'm actually going even beyond that, including some other techniques. And I've got some new secrets that I'm not even going to tell you yet.
No problem.
Oh, I have to have that book.
It's going to be fun.
So the process of writing a book is very different. The process of self-publishing a book is very different than the process of working with one publisher or the other. The publishing process that XRX Books uses is very different in the sense that we don't put time limits on it. Books take as long as they need to take, but they're pretty intense. And it's a unique collaboration, as most of our authors know. Can you talk about that process at all?
Oh, sure. The process is really interesting because it's very different than normal publishing. I have been involved in other, you know, with other books and other publishing ventures. And what's really unique about the way that XRX works is Elaine and Rick work with you in terms of helping you develop your own vision. So rather than coming up with an outline and just fleshing out the outline, we have lots of interaction. We have lots of meetings. We have lots of talking. And they don't tell me what to do. What's amazing is it's not like they suggest, okay, you should do this, or why don't we get one of these. They encourage me to think further. Like the process, like you said, it is challenging. And, you know, I would say that it's the kind of thing where you have to push yourself. And so what they're looking for are books that are really, really unique rather than just another pattern book or, you know, a book that doesn't have a lot of information in it. What they are doing is they're allowing me to explore so that the book evolves as I'm writing it. And what I'm finding is that, you know, and what's great is every time I come back from a Stitches, I've got new ideas and more ideas because I've just taught something in another way. And so I can present that to Elaine and Rick and say, you know, I'm thinking I was going to do it this way, but now I want to do it that way. And they're so encouraging. You know, I have to say, one of the things I appreciate most is Elaine and Rick get my craziness. And that's not common, because most people, you know, most of the publishers are very specific about they want you to do it within their style. And even though there are style sheets for writing, you know, the patterns and such, they are really allowing me to evolve this in a way that I'm presenting my voice. And it's an amazing process working with them. I mean, besides the fact that I love both of them and they're amazing people, they have this wonderful way of bringing out of you as an author and designer what you didn't even know was there.
Well, thank you for that very much. And for our listeners who don't know who she's talking about with Elaine and Rick, she's talking about Elaine Rowley, who's the R in XRX, one of my partners and family, and Rick Mondragon, the editor of Knitters Magazine. Besides working on the magazine, they both work very much with our authors to help with the books.
Yeah, and so, they have very different visions. You know, the thing that's really cool is they both have their own creative visions that when, you know, they'll make little suggestions that just blow my mind and go, oh my gosh, I didn't think of that. And that, you know, that's also the thing of going back to the whole thing about inspiration. I find this process really inspiring because it's very different than, you know, I've been contracted to do chapters of books before or, you know, whatever it is. And the process usually was filling in the blank. And this is not at all. This is really, you know, by the time this book will be done, I feel like we will have been able to communicate a true vision of, you know, a new way to look at things and a fresh way to approach your fiber art.
Sounds really good, and you know,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to working on marketing that book with you and
cool.
So may I say
something?
Abs, I was going to just invite you in, Mary. Please, it's your turn again.
No, I just want to say, Myra, you're a breath of fresh air.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
Mary, I'll let you take it away.
Oh, okay. Let's see now. I understand. Oh, we'd love to hear more about your... On a different note, actually, we'd love to hear more about your philanthropic endeavors. Like, we know you work against puppy mills.
In the past, I used to do a lot more dog-oriented stuff. I really worked very passionately and long time doing dog rescue. We fostered dogs and I did a lot of stuff for education about no puppy mills and things like that. But now that the Smunch is last dog standing, he's not having any of that. He doesn't want anybody else in the house. So my dog days are behind me at the moment. But what I do at this point, which I love, is, you know, rather than picking one specific philanthropic thing, one of the things I love the most about the fiber community in general is how much people want to help each other, how many people volunteer to make things of all different kinds of things to help each other. And so what I do a lot of is I find a project that, you know, somebody might be offering and work with that, you know, and make something for things. And, you know, in the last year, I've had there's just been some wonderful stuff. Like there's the Elephants for Joplin, you know, about Elephants
right.
for Joplin and CC.
Yeah.
I thought that was amazing. That was amazing. Pardon me. That was so amazing. And, like, there was, and I belong to this wonderful guild. There's a guild called the El Segundo Slip Stitchers. Shout out to ESSS. But they have an amazing amount of charity work that they do. And that's one of the main things that guild does. And they did a wonderful one in the past year where we did a baby shower. It was actually a baby shower where everyone made baby stuff. And it went to mothers who needed just anything for their children. And
oh, isn't that nice? Mm-hmm.
It was beautiful. And the most remarkable thing is it filled a room.
Really?
People brought just they made blankets, they made stuff, but they also brought diapers and they brought, you know, they buy like five things of Huggies. And so the room was
That's
filled
wonderful.
And that to me is just amazing. And then there was one other one that it just killed me. I just loved it so much was there was a call out for, they were reopening the other school in Newton, Connecticut. And they wanted handmade snowflakes for
the kids. I remember
that. So I made a ton of crochet snowflakes and sent them up.
Oh,
but there's
nice.
So many opportunities for us and so many ways to be philanthropic and really help each other. And I think that's what a lot of fiber artists have in common.
Right. So how can we help? And, like, where do we start? Where do we go?
You have a guild, the guilds really do a lot of work to support charities. But also just on Ravelry, Ravelry alone, I mean, there's always some charity or some philanthropic thing that people are involved in, and you can go to the forums in Ravelry, you can go to the groups, and literally just type in charity or, you know, I mean, there's so many of them. There's lots and lots of, you know, and there's things like, we were just doing stuff for Halos of Hope. I mean, Halos of Hope is another organization that's incredible. There's a place you can go immediately, and you can make hats for Halos. And, you know, there's just so many ways. But I think I really, really tip my hat to the people who have created these ways for us as knitters and crocheters to give back, because I think everybody really does want to do something for someone else. You know, that's the main thing I see in our fiber community is, like you said, people are so nice. They're such wonderful people, and there's lots and lots of ways. So I'd say check out Halos of Hope, check out Elephants for Joplin, check out those different organizations, and just make stuff. Just make something. Rather, you know, you don't have to start an organization. There's lots of them out there that could use your help. And some of them, you know, like Doctors Without Borders, they don't want your stuff, but we can support them and help them. You know, lots of charities that really do wonderful things for people. So, yeah, check out the Ravelry groups and see what's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to put my two cents in really quickly because, as all of you know, I am Halos of Hope is extremely important to me. I joined the board not so long ago, and of course Pam Hashke and Drew and Mark and I did the buzz last year. If you're a listener out there and you are looking for one, and you care for my opinion, I would really recommend that you give Halos of Hope a look. That's halosofhope.org, and we'd appreciate any support you could give us.
Absolutely, what he said, because it's an amazing organization, and Pam is incredible. I mean, really, they're doing so much wonderful work. And, you know, you just need to make a little hat. That's it. Just make a hat and send it off.
You are such an inspiration, Myra. No. I feel like going out there right now and just, you know, knitting.
Grab a hook and make a hat.
I will. I'm going to do that.
There you go.
All right. So I think we're coming down to close to the end of this thing. Myra, before we wrap this up, is there anything else that you want to say to our listeners, something we didn't ask, or just a message that you want to get out there?
Well, you know, I basically think that the message you send to everybody at the end of your shows is really my just so near and dear to my heart too, is that we can all be creative, and we can, you know, this is an amazing community. I love you guys. The fiber community has changed my life. My world is so different and so vast now because of my interactions with everybody, with students, with Teen Stitches, with just everybody. And, you know, the other teachers, the vendors, it's just an amazing community, and I just want to say thank you to everybody because this has really been a dream come true.
Oh, that's wonderful. And really quickly before we say goodbye to you, Myra, your upcoming teaching schedule is?
I'm going to be at Midwest. And so Stitches Midwest, I'm really not doing as much teaching as I had before because I'm working mainly on the book. So really the only places you're going to get to see me this year are Stitches Midwest and then Stitches East in Hartford. And one of them is in August and one's in November, but you can find it at knittinguniverse.com, I believe is the address. But that's it. I'm going to be doing two events this year and focusing on the book. So if you want to come out and play, I'd love to see everybody, and you can come see me in Chicago or in Hartford.
Well, you know I'm going to see you. I always look forward to that. I'd like to thank you for joining us this morning, Myra. And
I
hope I can convince you to maybe twist your arm to come back and join me in the show when your book is published.
Oh, I would love that. I would just love that. Thank you so much. This has been a wonderful, wonderful day. And Mary, thank you.
Myra, no, thank you. I think you are just totally a wonderful person.
Oh, you are.
I love your passion. I love your passion. You have,
thank you.
Inspiration to everyone.
I appreciate that.
You know, I learn a lot from you, and thank you so much. And I really hope we have another opportunity.
Well, I hope we get to meet, too. You know, when you come down to Stitches in California, I'm in California, so we have to hook up, girl.
Yes, I will. I will.
Okay.
I will, girlfriend. I love you, Moira.
Okay. Thank you so much, Benjamin.
No, thank you, Myra. So, Mary.
Yes.
That's our show. How
oh, my gosh.
I know, it was fun. It's over, it's like in an instant, wasn't it?
I know. I had so much fun. I love Myra. Oh, I love you. I do want to thank you for the opportunity, Benjamin. It has been a fantastic experience for me. And, I want to do it again someday. Who knows?
One of these days when I may decide that I need another co-hooligan. Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
So
oh,
I'd like to
fun.
Thank you for joining me on the show today, and I hope
you
had fun. And I had a blast through this whole process. You know, it actually takes a lot of work to get to this level. You didn't probably realize it was going to be this much work to get here, but you did.
No.
Great job. No, it was a lot of work.
Didn't.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
But it was fun. It was fun.
So,
and Myra made it very easy for me.
Yes.
She's
yes.
fabulous. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, she can. You know, she's not the most difficult person in the world to get along with, as you probably can tell.
No, and she's funny.
She
she's
is
a real
funny.
Hoot. She's a
yes.
hoot. I love her.
She's
mm-hmm.
a hoot. And you even say hoot like a Canadian.
Well, do I hoot?
Yes, you got that.
How do you say hoot?
I don't know. My dear wife is on the chat room right now listening, Mrs. Hulick, and so I like to tease her accents every single time.
Oh, you know what? They do bug me about, okay, hoot. I've never realized hoot. Okay, what's the other word that people make fun of, Canadians?
Out and about.
Oh, out and about.
Yes.
We say out. Well, how do you say
yes.
it?
Well, no, I always say that the Canadians say hoot and a boot, but they don't.
Yeah, hoot, out and or roof.
A roof? Yeah. All right. Well, we better slide on here. Mary, thank you very much.
Thank you, Benjamin. Have a great day.
You bet. So that was my guest co-hooligan, Mary Sarnese, and she helped me today with our wonderful guest, Myra Wood, designer, teacher, and soon-to-be XRX Books author. Make sure that you keep up with Myra by visiting her website, myrawood.com. That's one you're going to want to bookmark. Next week, I'll have Nathania Apple on the show. She's one of the owners of Pearlescence Yarns, a local yarn store in Sunnyvale, California. She's absolutely one of the most beautiful souls I have ever met. She'll be talking with us about what it's like to run a yarn shop, her philosophies on the industry, her approach toward customer service and building a community, and talking about a charity project that she's working on in her store with her partners. Everyone who meets Nathania falls in love with her, and if you tune in next week, you will too. If you missed any of the links that we've mentioned here today, please don't worry. You'll be able to find them all on the show notes for this episode at fiberhooligan.com just as soon as I get the chance to write them up and post them. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending your time with me. I'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.